This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Last year, local environmental journalism portal makaranga.org published four in-depth articles based on their investigation into forest use changes here in Peninsula Malaysia. So called the Forest Files, the series explored issues such as forest use policies, key drivers of forest loss, and also how citizens could influence forest use. So in our first of three interviews covering Makaranga's findings, I'm joined today by Lau Yao Hua, the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org, and also Adrian Yeo, who was formerly the Special Skills Officer and advisor to the Minister in Charge of Forestry under the Pakatan Harapan government, discussing issues such as who has the final say over what happens to our forests here in Peninsula Malaysia, what usually motivates state governments to gazette or excise forest area from permanent reserve forests, before we look at ways that the state and federal government can collaborate to improve the way forests are managed here in Peninsula Malaysia. So welcome, gentlemen. How are you both today?
Good, good. Thanks for having us.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you for joining me. So I guess, you know, just for some context, Yao Hua, you know, you actually spent about 9 months last year investigating forest use changes in Peninsula Malaysia. I mean, tell me a little bit about that. You know, why did you spend all that time doing this?
Yeah, so it wasn't just me. It was, I did that with Makaranga, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was Siu Lin and me. And it was a 9 month investigation. At first, you know, when we applied for, I mean, the whole project was sponsored or sort of like partially funded by the Pulitzer Southeast Asia Rainforest Journalism Fund. And when we proposed it, we actually thought that it would only be like a 2-3 month kind of an investigation. And then it went, you know, it just expanded and
full
became
pregnancy.
A monster. Yeah, well, you're right, like 9 months, right?
Yeah.
And the whole idea was, you know, Makaranga wanted to do or wants to do, you know, in-depth analytical pieces. You know, I wouldn't say really like investigative pieces yet, but really in-depth one. And we thought that everyone, you know, our readers, you know, in a survey, they told us that they really want us to tackle forestry or deforestation issues. And I myself felt that I did not understand the issue well enough. Like, what are the laws? You know, what are the real drivers of deforestation? Is it really, you know, we always think of, you know, oil palm, you know, oil palm estates, but is it really oil palm estates, or is it like the new favorite now? Durian, Musang King, right?
Musang King,
so
yeah.
What are there more fundamental drivers behind this? And so that was what we set out to, you know, to learn ourselves. And that then, you know, sort of like evolve into Forest Files. And through it all, I would say we really learned what is, you know, the policies that govern forestry issues in Malaysia, who gets to make the final say on whether a land stays forested or not. And also at the end, what the NGOs, the foresters, and what the people, including politicians, think we can do. I mean, by we, I mean the whole rakyat can do, and the politicians, to really move forward and improve our forest use.
Mm-hmm. And those are some like really major topics. But I do understand that the investigation only focused on Peninsula Malaysia and largely excluded Sabah and Sarawak. Why was that?
Well, to be honest, the real reason is because it was just me and Siu Lin.
So it was a manpower issue.
Yeah, that was the first thing. We did consider doing it, looking at Sabah and Sarawak also. But then we realized the legislation is slightly different. The operations are different. The terms used can be different. And then to really capture that, all these nuances, I will have to talk to three different offices, at least, you know, Sabah, Sarawak, and then Peninsula Forestry Department. So I figured that so much is written or reported about Sarawak already, you know, less so on Sabah, but plenty on Sarawak. So I was like, let's look at Peninsula Malaysia first. And then when I looked into Peninsula Malaysia, I discovered that, you know, in the 30 years, almost 30 years between 1990 and 2019, the official data shows that Peninsula Malaysia actually has lost more forest area than Sarawak or Sabah combined even. Mm-hmm. Yet, so to me, I've never heard people say that. So I said, okay, this deserves a good look at Peninsula Malaysia forestry or forest use.
Yeah. And you know, when I was reading your article, and of course it's in four parts, it's very in-depth, you know, and there's so much there. But, you know, one thing that struck me was that it said that Malaysia has been losing forests since all the way back from the 1950s. Maybe you can share with the listeners, you know, what the stats are like. And I guess, you know, following that, what was actually done to curb the rampant deforestation that was happening at the time?
Yeah. So we always hear government officials say that we want to keep our country's natural forest cover at 50% and above, right? Yep. But what is it for? So for the whole country now, as of 2019, according to official data, it's about 54% of our land is considered forest. Mm-hmm. In Peninsular Malaysia itself, it's actually 43%, so less than half. What it used to be, well, even up to like say like the, you know, in 1970, in Peninsular Malaysia, it was slightly more than 60% was forested. And so then in the 70s, a lot of logging happened, a lot of deforestation happened. So by deforestation, I think we need to qualify that a bit. No, there's a difference between forest loss and then deforestation. You know, very technical, but it's important to know the difference. Deforestation means, you know, according to how our forestry department looks at it and also how FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, looks at it, is that deforestation means the land is converted from forest to other uses.
That's right.
Right, so that's deforestation. Forest cover loss can just be still forest land, but then you just chop off a few trees. So yeah, so in the 70s, there was a lot of deforestation happening. I think mainly because of the FELDA and the FELCRA programs that were being run a lot at the time. So I've read reports that say, you know, up to 250,000 hectares were deforested every year. And the actual government plan for that time was only 60,000 hectares a year. So it's like, you know, four times more were deforested. Anyway, so in response to that, you know, in response to the rampant logging or rampant deforestation in the 60s and the early 70s, the Malaysian federal government actually came out with this national forestry policy in 1978. And the whole gist of that national forestry policy is to make forestry more sustainable in Peninsular Malaysia. So that, you know, by sustainable, we mean that it, well, in the actual wording, right, it's like to manage forests to maximize benefits in terms of, you know, economy, social, and the environment. And so that a lot of the forests were sort of like recategorized or classified as what we know now as Hutan Simpan Kekal, mm-hmm. permanent reserve forests. Mm-hmm. And then within those forests, you got to do sustainable forestry. There's no complete logging where you just cut off every tree, or what we call the Chuchi Mangkok kind of a logging where the whole hill becomes bald.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely not allowed in Hutan Simpan Kekal or permanent reserve forest. So that was, you know, sort of like our government's response to that rampant logging in the early 70s. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I guess, you know, for those who don't quite understand, you know, maybe we can get some definitions out of the way. What is actually defined as forest area, specifically here in Malaysia?
Yeah, by forest area, this is actually a very important point here. The way the government sees it, you know, when you look at forestry, or anytime a government official talks about forest, you know, their data comes from the forestry department. And for the forestry department, a forest is land that is classified as forest. So it's on the land registrar or somehow. So it's what the land is classified for, mm-hmm. its use. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if that land is on the registrar or somehow it's classified as forest, but there's not a single tree on it as of now, it still counts into the tally as forest area.
Gosh.
It's not so bad. I mean, you know, most of us would think, oh, that's like cheating.
There are
arguments that support that, right? Because what is not, although there's no tree there now, but this piece of land is meant to be mm-hmm. forest. Mm-hmm. So maybe in 10 years' time, there'll be trees there. So this is the kind of logic. So conversely, if I have like 100 trees in my backyard, that it doesn't go into the tally of forest area because my land is residential land. It's not forest land.
It's not defined as such, right?
It's not classified as such. So it's a legal classification in the official data.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So that's what we need to know, you know,
okay.
When we talk about forest here in Malaysia.
Right. So, okay. And who classifies this? This is classified by the state governments or the federal government?
Yeah.
State governments. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all state. I know Adrian can really shed some light on this. You know, forest issues are state issues.
Yes.
I mean, state authority, right, Adrian?
Yeah, definitely. Our constitution states it very clearly that anything touches on the land is a state matter or state-owned.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, of course, the land office, a party which we always missed out in the discussion of forest issues, a land office is the registrar, like what Yahua has mentioned.
Yeah, the land office.
Okay.
The land office or district officers, DOs, they are the main owner that manages all lands for the state, mm-hmm. right? So then you have your Hutan Simpan Kekal or PRF. Then this cluster classification of land will then be managed by the state forestry. So in all hierarchy of things, you know, state forestry is just a manager, a land manager, we will say. Mm-hmm. So they only manage after the land office give them the permission to manage. So state forestry will have all the technical knowledge, know-how, how to manage, how to develop, how to plan and run, operate the forest. So Yahoo, I just now mentioned a little bit about, you know, some Hutan Simpan Kekal or permanent reserve forests, they have no trees or some even have buildings, you know. This is acceptable because, you know, you may want to excise, you know, use the forest to better manage the overall. For example, you may have a training ground for forestry officers. You may have ecotourism, you know. So you sacrifice 2-3% out of your total 100% of that forest complex to be benefit for the whole forest. So these are some of the things that it may sound very terrible, like, you know, there's no tree in forest reserve and that. But if you look at holistically in a big overall picture, mm-hmm. you can have education center, you can have a visitor center where you have get people immersed, young people immersed and learn about the beauty of the forest. Then you see the purpose of that education center.
Okay, so. Yeah. So basically, state governments have the final say over what happens to our forests here in Peninsular Malaysia. Am I correct?
That is true. And specifically, the state have the Menteri Besar or Ketua Menteri, mm-hmm. and then you have also assisted by the state cabinet, which is the EXCO, Executive Councillors of the States. So usually, natural resource, which is the in charge of forest, usually is held by the Menteri Besar or the Ketua Menteri, but not necessarily. It is usually so because it's one of the most lucrative portfolio for any states. Mm. So, but then of course all these decisions are made within the EXCO meeting of the state, help facilitated with. The help of the land office and also the EPU of the state, which is we also call the UPENs of the state.
So one thing that I never was able to really like confirm in my reporting was, you know, at this the level of the state EXCO, the state government, right? So the Menteri Besar, you know, Adrian said usually the Menteri Besar holds the portfolio of natural resources. In fact, I've yet to come across an exception to that. So I think it's like always they always hold. I don't say usually, it's like they always hold it.
Okay.
But when it comes to a decision to, you know, when we say that a PRF, right, a permanent reserve forest is such until it is sort of like excised or de-gazette, you know, not a forest, not a reserve forest by the state government, this decision, right, I cannot confirm whether it's a sole decision of the Menteri Besar or is that a real collective? You know, if the others say no, if the other members of the EXCO say, maybe don't excise it, the final decision, is it really, you know, like who makes the final decision? Yeah, I mean, do you know, Adrian?
Well, the one who makes the decision is the chairman of the EXCO. And the chairman of EXCO is, of course, the Menteri Besar.
Okay.
Okay.
I should have interviewed you for my story.
So there you have it, Yahoo. No, it's the Menteri Besar.
But of course, there's also a check and balances, yeah. Mm. Before such a decision was brought to the EXCO meetings, the first process that kickstart this whole process, there must be a proposal. There must be an intention to change the usage of the land for either for development, for mitigation purposes, for anything besides forest reserve. There must be a proposal that hand in into the portfolio of the natural resources. Then the whole process kickstarts where the UPENs and the land office will then facilitate a technical agency meeting, do investigation, and then goes up to the... then once the UPENs and the land office is supportive, then it will only bring it back to the state EXCO for the final decision. That is the usual way, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the case of Selangor, there's another layer. Yeah. So when the earlier processes that I just explained is just very much internal within the executive of the state. Proposal comes in, discussion within the land office and technical agencies, bring it back, the paper back to the state excos, and then once it's decided, it was signed, then the decision goes back to the land office, then the land office will then change to do the necessary. It's all very within the offices or the building of the state excos at the MBs. In Selangor, there was an amendment to the state forestry bill in 2011 where we added a layer of public consultation. This public consultation, it was to add one additional layer so that it can be made known and publicly gazetted in newspaper and also mass media so that people can have a say onto it. So previously, you know, if somebody want to build a 100-story house next to your land property, you need to get the approval from the surrounding property landowner side. So that very small public consultation, so-called, has been done. There's a process for it. But then for forests, there's none. So and this process and the layer of public consultation we put in is that not just people who live next to the forest, the whole of everybody in not just in Selangor, but we put priority for Selangor citizen, but anybody can also put in the comments or recommendation and suggestions whether to accept or not to accept the proposal to gazette any forest. So once that happened, the process, remember earlier on, the proposal goes into to the state office, mm-hmm. and the state office will goes to the land office to do the facilitation. The public consultation comes after that, where okay, land office is agreeable and satisfied with the condition. Then you will pass back to the state forestry. State forestry, please do a public consultation process and get the necessary done. Once the public consultation is done, then it comes back to the table of the state forestry. State forestry will then hold another technical agency discussion. Mm-hmm. To address all this bantahan or comments or letters that comes in, objections that comes in. Then they will prepare a big report again, goes back to the land office and state UPENS, and then if it again satisfied, it goes back up to the state ESCO meeting. So it's just another layer of public consultation.
All right, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be discussing what motivates state governments to either gazette or excise forest area from permanent reserve forests with both Lau Yau Hua and Adrian Yeo. So stay tuned. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today are Lau Yau Hua. He is the co-founder of Makaranga.org. He's also the writer and editor there. And also Adrian Yeo, who was formerly the Special Skills Officer and Advisor to the Minister in Charge of Forestry under the Pakatan Harapan government. So last year, Makaranga.org published 4 in-depth articles based on their investigation into forest use changes here in Peninsular Malaysia. And on the show today, we're kind of breaking those findings down. And we're looking specifically at issues such as who has the final say over what happens to our forests here in Peninsular Malaysia. So, you know, guys, as we know, almost 86% of forests are classified as permanent reserve forests or PRF under the National Forestry Act of 1984. What usually motivates state governments to either gazette or excise forest area from these PRFs? Yahua, you know, what did you find out from your investigations?
Well, I didn't come up with anything new when it comes to trying to explain, you know, the state government's decision to excise, permanent reserve forests, you know. But I just look back into the news. Usually when there are protests or there were questions, people questioning such decisions, the state officials usually say, oh, it is to generate revenue for development, right? Mm. Or for or if they decide to log a place, then it's again to generate revenue. So it seems like revenue and job creation, development of the state are like the main reasons that the state government would want to excise a permanent reserve forest into other purposes like agriculture or residential or industrial, whatever it is. So in my reporting, I tried to look at whether it makes sense, in terms of revenue, and not in terms of excision, because if we want to look at the money returns from an excised forest, and then you know, how much it gives in terms of industry of that. I think there's no question that it's a lot of money that could be made compared to keeping it as forest, and then you only log it sustainably once every 25 or once every 30 years, right? We cannot forget that if there's a factory there, then the factory pays like a premium, you know, to the state, right? And then there's like land tax and all these things. You know, same for residential, right? Anyway, but when we look at logging, if we can just look at the logging itself, right? When they choose to log, open up a piece of forest, and then, you know, that the loggers can bid for it or tender for it, and then they want to log it. So they say that the logging gives the state a huge portion of their revenue. But then when I look into, and all this revenue is reported in the Forestry Department annual reports. Every state has it, you know, so you can go look it up. It's not always easy to look for these reports, but they are there. So when I tried to compare how much state gets from logging compared to, are they getting enough? I guess that's the question I was trying to get at. So how do I know if they're getting enough? Then I compare it to how much the timber is worth.
Mm.
Because you can imagine, like, you know, the state can choose to log the forest themselves rather than having other, you know, private loggers to concessionaires to do it. So what I discovered was that the state forestry revenue from logging itself is actually, you know, it could be 8 times lower than the market value of the timber. Right, so that means they're charging the loggers like really little compared to what the loggers are getting out of the forest. And to me, that would be very puzzling, because if you are always dependent, if you always say you are dependent on logging revenue for state development, then why are you charging the loggers so little? Why can't you charge more? Or if you cannot charge more, then why don't you do it yourselves? And then you sell the timber and then you get a lot more money. There are various answers to that. You know, the loggers themselves first tell me, oh, it's not too little. I mean, sorry, yeah, they disagree that they are being undercharged, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, they give valid reasons. They say that sometimes they cannot sell the reported market value of the timber is not as high as it is on what we can find online, what is reported by the officials. So that's one. So they're saying that, oh, we actually don't earn that much. The second is like there's a lot of expenses that cannot be accounted for. Some which we can mention on air, like, you know, their CSR, they say.
Mm-hmm.
And some which we cannot mention on air. And so that's that. So all this eat into their expenses. And so that's from the logger's side. And from the foresters, I've heard that they've told me that they cannot do it, because if they do it, the loggers would be angry and the loggers won't like that. But in the end, I think it's really up to the state government to decide, you know, like if I want to charge you more. Some states are really charging a lot, and it varies across states. Like Kedah has like the highest premium charge for loggers for forestry activities, 10,000 ringgit per hectare.
Okay.
Compared to like, I think just not more than 2,000-3,000 in other states. So it's like, you know, 2-3 times difference. Yeah.
Adrian, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I would just have to mention government should have sold the timber themselves. You know, first of all, government is not in the business of business, doing business. Yeah, government's role is just to govern and provide the platform to facilitate business.
Yeah.
And the wisdom of the government of the day to, you know, plan which industry, which businesses to promote and what to conserve and all. So that's the wisdom of the government of the day. And in terms of income for the state, you know, I'm not sure whether what's the reported amount in the annual report, whether it's just the collection from state forestry, which is on it comes from the cess of each species and cubic meter of each timber log that they harvest. But there's also other income that the state have collected, you know, from the land, you know, land usage, land titles, and land fees as well. And of course, then later on, you know, once this happened, that you need to bring the timber to a sawmill, and then it gives the downstream economic value as well. So It's on paper, it may seem small, but you know, when you go downstream to the bigger industry, up until to the export, to the export taxes and what so and whatnot, then you have a big industry of and revenue, not just to the state but also to the federal as well. But then how do you differentiate which goes to whose coffer? And then that's where the state felt that, you know, the land is ours, you know, then but we only collected just on the land fees or land toll that they have it, so that they may feel short changes in that sense. But my comment on this is that is very short-sighted, you know. We instead of just valuing the forest on the timber, we should also put value on nana is very popular and very sexy, which is carbon, you know, how much carbon sequestration, carbon stock you have in your forest complex, you know. To me, that is also not sufficient, you know. We must also put value in your economic service, environment services that the forest can provide, ecosystem services that the forest can provide, in terms of your water, you know. We know that our raw water comes from the river basins of our forest. Without the forest, where will you get the water? Of course, desalination, you know, tapping from other states' river. You know, now that's a big hot thing, hot discussion now. So all these are even also very costly, and we can put a number onto it. Then the next level, we should also put in the biodiversity, the biotech, you know, or unproven or undiscovered potential biotechnology,
bioprospecting, you know, for like medicine or
IPs that you can get out of it. Those are also can put into dollar and cents, and that will if all these things if the government of the day have all these numbers, then they may have to rethink on how to put a value on the forests in the future.
Yeah, I think Adrian makes you know, many good points there, you know, on like diversifying the, you know, the values of the forest. Because I think now, you know, based on my conversation with the foresters and, you know, politicians and all the NGOs, it seems like the state government, you know, a huge flaw of my reporting is that I could not speak to any of the Menteri Besar. Nobody layan me. And so I couldn't really get behind into their mindset on why they would, you know, excise a forest reserve or, you know, gazette a land into the forest reserve. But it seems like most of the time they're thinking, as Adrian said, they're thinking of the forest in terms of, you know, when it comes to revenue, it's like either the timber or the land itself. So we often get this argument that, oh, the hutan is already hutan miskin or degraded forest.
Yes.
So then, you know, might as well just, or the better alternative is to just de-gazette it, excise it, and then build like a shopping mall or, you know, a golf course on it.
Mixed development, very popular.
Yeah, so I think that's also one of the other reasons or motivation for the state government that we can see even in the newspapers. Yeah. But what actually drives them, I think,
we can make some assumptions, I suppose. But I mean, just to pivot a little bit, I think it was just last week, I mean, very recently, actually, the National Forestry Bill Amendment 2020 was agreed upon by the authorities. But there was one major exception, right? And that was for the proposed amendment on the provision of conducting public investigations and the need for simultaneous replacement of permanent forest reserve, which was gazetted out. For those unfamiliar with all these terms, right, you know, what does that mean exactly? And maybe you can also share what are the implications of a decision like this?
Well, Adrian was talking just now about, you know, how public participation in Selangor, and it's only, compulsory in Selangor, right? It adds this extra layer of, input, you know, from the public stakeholders, you know, when the state government wants to degazette the forest. And the other one, the simultaneous replacement, is actually also very important. The proposed change, the proposed amendment to the National Forestry Act was that every time the state government degazettes or, you know, cuts out a chunk of the permanent reserve forest, they have to, at the same time, replace it with equivalent or similar area forest. As of now, in the National Forestry Act, actually it states there that they should do it if they can, sort of, I'm paraphrasing, but it's not compulsory and there is no set timeline, for them to replace it.
Mm.
So if you actually look at the National Forestry data, you can see like about 100,000 hectares are proposed but not gazetted yet. And I've heard foresters tell me that they just can't find a place to they can't find forests to replace the ones that have been gazetted out. Yeah.
Okay.
So if we have these two proposed amendments enacted, I think it makes a big deal because then the public has a say. The public knows, and then the public has a say. And then if the state no longer has land to replace a degazetted permanent reserve forest, then they just can't degazette permanent reserve forest. And then it's a safeguard that we always have that level of forest. To me, that's the really important, those are really important points. And this actually has been in the talks for quite some years, actually. So to me, I mean, it was disappointing that it was rejected.
Mm.
Yeah. Adrian, what do you think?
Well, it's not something new. It's been in a hearsay since the 2010s, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was finally brought... of course, you know, this is quite contentious. You know, you need to get buy-in from many states, governments, actually all the state governments, before a national amendments can be done. You know, because you see, Forest Bill is quite interesting in the sense that it has really no teeth in our National Forestry Bill Act,
mm-hmm.
because every state would have to, in turn, enact their state forestry enactment. That's why you have every state have their own different version of state forestry enactment, borrowing majority of it from the National Bill, National Act, but they have the right to follow or not to follow. So to have a good, you know, lawmaking process before tabling it as a national amendment or national bill, it is the best that, you know, you can get all the agreement from all the state governments before you do that. So it was finally tabled to the MEXCO meeting, which is the environment ministers of the Fed, environment minister and all the EXCO and in charge of all the environment portfolio for the states in 2016 or 2017. It was tabled for this bill to be brought up. Some agreed, some disagreed. Selangor said, no problem, I've already done that. Then it went quiet because the following year is election year, you know, election cycle. So 2018, then nobody brought it up again. When the new government, which I was in the office, you know, we speed track it, you know, it was scheduled to be tabled in the March 2020 parliament sitting. But of course, we know what happened right before that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you see, these two parts of the bill, which is, you know, simultaneous replacement and also public consultation, is the core of the amendment that we are trying to push for. Of course, there are others, you know, like technical terms, increasing fines, readjusting all the SES and increasing entry fees to the measure, to our Hutan Lipo and all our forest reserve parks. All these are actually, by the way, you know, let's lump all that together. The main thing that you want to amend is these two things, and these two things that they're taking out. So it's quite funny. I'll go one more comment on the simultaneous replacement is that, you know, this line was in the act already, yeah. But it's, again, like I mentioned, it's not compulsory. It's good to have. And there are some states who, in lieu of acreage land, they put money into it. Mm-hmm. So they replace the land value, equal to X amount, and then it was the amount that the developer paid in, and then that solved the whole equation. But the new amendment says no, you know, you must replace it simultaneously. The two gazette must go in at the same time. You take out and you put in at the same time. So it makes it very strong. It gives all the states a rethinking, you know, whether they really want to do that or not, because it is land, you know, it is quite costly and it's very difficult to find very similar land. I just want to put an example of the ongoing Kuala Langat forest saga as well, you know.
Yeah.
That's some of the last remaining peat forests that we have in Selangor, and to replace, for the Selangor state government to be able to replace the same type of forest, number one, the same quality of forest and the same size is quite, it's not impossible, but it's quite tough. It's quite tough. So for the state government of the day to proceed until to drag this process to such a stage, I really do not know what's the thinking. And then I hope that there's more new thoughts to come into it to reconsider.
Well, I think the replacement, even as it is worded now in the National Forestry Act, is just an area, replaced with an area of, you know, replaced with a land of similar area. There's no mention of quality in there.
Yeah.
Right? So it's, I'm not sure whether in the proposed amendment there's any mention of quality. If they have to mention like the same forest type, the same quality, I think it's almost impossible to replace, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I guess just looking to the future, maybe Adrian, you know, we've been talking a lot about how land is on the state list in the constitution, right? So the state government is the one that's making all the decisions. But what are your recommendations for ways that we can improve the way that state governments manage these sorts of issues surrounding land use and forests?
Well, I think we have to relook, and how do we, as I mentioned earlier, how do we value or see forests? Whether do we see them as just land with trees, or do we see a whole ecosystem with wildlife, with fungi, with butterflies, with water? You know, how do we value and put all this kind of thing? I have one recommendation is that, you know, the state have to decide, or the country have to decide, what do you want to have in your forest?
Mm.
You know, what is the number of biodiversity concentration you want in the forest? You know, now there's previously there's a big hoo-ha on, you know, we are losing our tigers, and then there's another hoo-ha, we are losing, we need more mangroves, and you know, there's of course a discussion about tapes as well, but some of these animals and wildlife, they need a wide range of roam. You know, if you take that tiger, you know, and put in their roaming range, and look into how much prey they have, that they need to survive as an apex predator. If you do the calculation backwards, you know, if you say today is 200 quantity of the tigers, if you want to double that to 400 or 500, do we have sufficient range or habitat or forest, connected forest for them?
Mm.
You know, if you want that number for 500 or 400, how big of a single forest complex do we need? Then how much do we have, you know? Then we work backwards, and how many prey, how many babi hutan, how many sambar deer, how many their food, you know, how many of the prey, you know. If you go down line of the food chain, food pyramid of all these animals, then how many acreage do we really need?
Mm.
If you do that, if someone managed to do that calculation, it is, I would say the conclusion could be we have not enough. We always need more, yeah.
Yeah.
So then the other thinking is that, you know, I also want to touch on, you know, the Central Forest Spine, you know, CFS Master Plan that we have introduced since 2010,
mm.
and nothing has been done much, you know. And they also have many linkages and many forest complex that was identified back then in early 2000s were gone today. And some of the identified linkages are linking to somebody's houses or somebody's highway.
Yeah.
So it's may not serve its form and function anymore. So there's a need to realign and relook into how do we want to manage and conserve our forests for the next 50 years, yeah.
Mm.
Because, you know, we know that island forests, we have too many island forests. We have one in Puchong, we have one in Bangi, one in Klang, you know, that, in terms of Selangor. So there are all these island forests which surrounded by somebody's houses and highways and whatnot. And we know that over time, the quality of the forest will degrade. So how do we want to manage that? How do we want to realign? Do we still want to link it up, you know, Puchong to Ampang as a forest linkway, or how do we want to do that? So that's the rethinking on how do we want to, don't be too sayang of all these things, but, you know, we need to think forward in the next 50 years of how do we keep connected forests as a cluster, as a complex, that the biodiversity, the wildlife can survive while we maintain a good health of the forest. Of course, the federal and state dynamic, it's also very complex. And we know that state always, the number one complaint is always not enough finances to maintain the forest and all.
Yeah.
And they always look at the federal offices to ministry to pump in money or subsidize or help out in the management of all these natural resources. So you need a very good relationship between the ministry and the state, state Excos and state MBs, and with a federal forest minister who is very good in diplomacy, or a CASU Secretary General who is very good in diplomacy with all these different states will definitely help. You know, you don't want state A arguing with federal ministry. You know, you need everybody to keep talking. You know, I think I see a very positive sign where, you know, on the same meeting, on the same land council meeting where they rejected the two amendment clause, they also adopted the national, finally we have a national forest policy.
Mm.
You know, that was not highlighted much. You know, the backstory was previously we have a national forest policy only for the peninsula. Sabah and Sarawak was not mentioned at all in the national policy. So there were, again, it took a couple of years to, you know, finally get them to come on board, which I think I want to congratulate the team that managed to do that today. And, you know, forest is not a silo. You know, you must look at forest, water, energy, industry, agriculture as lump sum. So when the federal, my advice always went to the federal offices is that you want to negotiate with the state, you cannot have just to talk to, you know, forest means forest. Forest and forest talk together. No, you know, forest must talk to the water guy, the water office, the water state authority, the pollution, the industry. Everybody must, you know, negotiate that dynamic relationship together and then not look at forest as just a single entity or a single commodity. It doesn't work that way. You know, forest is not a standalone.
Mm-hmm.
My last point is that, you know, this is to shout out to the buyer countries. Our timber are mainly exported to various so-called rich or developed country,
mm-hmm.
which they also shouted, you know, the, all this, you know, you need to be sustainably certified, you need to be properly managed your forests, you know. And Malaysia, we have our own timber certification. There's also international audit. There's also third-party certification. But what we are finding out today is that even after all the certification, the demand for a premium, the premium price is not what the buyers are paying for. It's very simple to shout and call and demand for certification and sustainable certification, but the buyer or there also must also put where the money is, you know, which is to pay the premium and pay the extra to buy this premium sustainable certified wood as well.
So, yeah, I spoke to a logger. One of the loggers told me that actually there's no premium.
Oh.
Like there's no premium. Like once you do all the calculations and the stuff and expenses, actually when you sell to, you know, like EU, right,
mm.
who's supposed to pay, you know, there's no premium. That your timber being certified, I don't know, but that was what he said. On the international market, it just doesn't fetch a higher price. Like it seems to align with what Adrian is saying here.
Yeah,
because it's a disservice. It's a disservice to the player, to landowner, to the timber concessioner, you know. And coming with all these audits and certification and documentation, it's not cheap. You know, there's a cost to it. But when we do the right thing and when we want to put it up to the market and you just buy as if it's just another illegal timber with the same price, you know, so it does make sense. So again, you know, nothing is free, nothing is cheap, you know, you need to pay for what you ask for.
Okay, all right. I guess, you know, any last thoughts or any last message that you'd like to leave us with? Are you guys hopeful that that 50% forest cover pledge that we've been talking about so much, you know, we've been hearing about since, I think, Tun Mahathir brought it up many, many years ago, back in the 90s. Do you think that will be honoured here in Malaysia?
Well, Sabah has set a target to maintain 50% forest cover. They are now almost at 60%. Mm-hmm. So say we take away 10% from Sabah, I do not know what is Sarawak's target, if they have one. But in Peninsular Malaysia, I have not heard a single state saying that they want to do more, so they only want to maintain. Mm. Selangor, I think I read this report a while ago, not so long ago, just recently, that they are trying to go up to 35%. They are now currently about 30% or slightly more. So I'm not optimistic. I'm not optimistic. I mean, like, why would Sabah want to say, oh, why should we keep it at 60%? Or, yeah, you know, Peninsula Malaysia is not doing their part of the deal kind of thing. Mm. So I am not optimistic. Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe Adrian, it's having been in the government, I hope you are more optimistic than I am. Yeah.
No, I never, I mean, whether in or out of the office, I never look at this 50% number. I mean, back in those days, you know, as a developing, you must give credit for the pledge, you know, as a new developing country, putting a pledge of 50% forest cover, it's a very ambitious pledge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At the time, we were 57, the whole country. At the time when Dr. Martin made that pledge, it was 57%. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So good and very ambitious in that pledge, but it doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean much, you know. When you look into the definition of forest cover, it doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean that you are untouched forest. It doesn't mean that 50% is filled with tigers and biodiversity, wildlife. It doesn't, you know. Forest cover, it means just mean that there is green cover. It could be anything underneath the green cover. So I always look at, you know, the quality of the forest, the number of the concentration of biodiversity, the number of wildlife, the health of the rivers. You know, that is the more important indicators for me. You know, we touch wood, you know, if we just have 30% forest, but we have the best water in the world, and we have no interruption for next 100 years of water supply. I mean, that's and we have 500 tigers. You know, that's good enough. You know. Don't be too stagnant or too lock ourselves into that 50% number.
Yeah.
But we look into other indicators, you know, then we can soften the discussion and then we can make more inroads to whoever the power of the day is.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me today. That was Lau Yao Hua, the co-founder of Makaranga.org, and also Adrian Yeo, who was formerly the Special Skills Officer and Advisor to the Minister in Charge of Forestry under the Pakatan Harapan government. And we were discussing some of the findings from Makaranga.org's investigation, very in-depth investigation into forest use changes here in Peninsular Malaysia. We're going to be continuing our coverage of this in two upcoming episodes of Earth Matters. So, you know, keep a lookout for that. But in the meantime, you can head to makaranga.org and look up Forest Files to read all those four articles in full. But if you miss any part of today's show, you can always download the podcast from bfm.my or from the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.